So now we look to 212.172 to do a development agreement with a property owner that's in the ETJ. And we'll cover the basics of those agreements, what you can put in them, what the requirements are, and then I'll give you one practitioner's list of helpful hints, and a checklist that I use. But one reason I like these things is because cities have the authority through these development agreements to really treat a piece of property in a comprehensive fashion, even though it's in the ETJ. You know, we heard earlier speakers, Andy Messer and Art Anderson, talk about their differing views of what a city can do unilaterally in the ETJ. And even as a pro city guy, I'll admit it's not much. We don't have the full power of zoning and full police powers in the ETJ like we do in the city limits. But when a property owner comes forth with a project either begging for a development agreement or the city is the one suggesting that tool, there is a chance for the developer and the city to sit down and try to achieve that always coveted win-win. You can actually hammer out an agreement where the owner or the future owner sometimes, properties under contract, waiting to see if we can get these entitlements sewn up, and can they get what they need to either build their project or flip the property or whatever their objective is. At the same time, can the city look out for its long-term public interests in this piece of property that may well someday be part of the city limits? And I quip in the paper, as I shall do now, that I think development agreements are a process of give and take, at which point all the real estate lawyers in the room chime in, the property owner gives and the city takes, right?